Okay, let me just officially welcome everyone to today's Conversations with the Masters call with my guest, Ariel Ford. My name is Mary Allen, and I'm a Master Certified Coach, author of The Power of Inner Choice, and of course, your host of this Conversations with the Masters series. I want to welcome all of our live listeners here today, and also those of you that may be listening to this as a recording. And as always, I want to thank you for continuing to spread the word about these Conversations with the Masters calls. And today, if you've been struggling to manifest your soulmate or maybe even given hope altogether, you're absolutely in the right place. And if you're an author, speaker, coach, or would like to get more well-known, well, there is no one better to learn from than our Master Ariel Ford today. Let me give you an official introduction of our guest. Ariel has been, for the last 25 years, living and promoting consciousness through all forms of media. She's the author of 7 books, including her latest book, The Soulmate Secret, How to Manifest the Love of Your Life with the Law of Attraction. Ariel is also a nationally recognized publicist and marketing expert, producer, and consultant who has catapulted many authors and celebrities into stardom in the self-help and human potential movement. You probably know some of the big names whom she's launched their careers, people like Deepak Chopra, Jack Canfield, and Mark Victor Hansen, creator of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, Neil Donald Walsh of Conversations with God, and many other best-selling authors like Wayne Dyer, Debbie Ford, Gary Zukav, Marianne Williamson, Louise Hay, Kenny Loggins, 11 of whom have become number one New York Times best-selling authors. Very nice. Ariel has compiled her knowledge and expertise of the industry into 25 CD audios and a resource guide, everything you should know about publishing. So we'll have her share a little bit about that on today's call. She's also a founding partner of the Spiritual Cinema Circle, which is a DVD club dedicated to movies about love and compassion. And I know I've watched many of these movies myself, and I can't wait for us to spend a little bit of time talking about how these DVDs can really impact our lives. And most recently, she's co-produced Deepak Chopra's Happiness Prescription, which is a new PBS pledge show. So, Ariel, welcome, welcome. We are so glad to have you here today.
Thanks, Mary. How are you?
I'm doing just fabulous. And even better, just preparing for our call today, boy, I feel like kindred spirits so much of, our backgrounds and some of the path of consciousness we've been on. And so it's really just such a delight to have you on this call.
Oh, good. Well, I've been looking forward to it.
And I'm particularly excited to have you this month since we had Valentine's Day a little early, earlier this month. And so we definitely want to spend some time talking about the soulmate secret. And, and touching a little bit upon, we've got so many coaches and authors and speakers on the line, and I know that they're wanting to make a bigger difference, so we'll touch on that as well. But I thought maybe we could just start by kind of asking a question in general about getting things done in a way. I mean, here you've got 7 books, 11 bestsellers for other people, programs and products, PBS specials. So what's your secret to success?
I think a lot of it is just showing up every day, I think it's a lot of different things. I was very fortunate to learn a variety of manifestation tools early in my career, and they all work, and I use them all the time. So it becomes like an ongoing game, like what do we want to have happen today, and how easy do we want it to be? And what do we have to do to get ready for it? And a lot of times, it's just about doing the next step. Jack Canfield has a really great story he tells about when you're driving down a dark country road and your headlights are on. all you can see is, you know, 25 yards in front of you. But that's all you really need to see. And it's kind of like that with projects. You can't always see exactly where you're going or how long it's going to take you to get anything done. But as long as you can see the next step, you're moving in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Boy, it's so, so true. And I think a lot of times where people even get caught is taking that next step. And so instead of, you know, leaning into the next step and then figuring out the next step and the next step and the next step, it's like we stop at step one instead of, you know, just getting on that path.
Yeah, sometimes you just have to jump.
And again and again and again and again. Well, and one thing I love as we jump into the soulmate secret is that as I was reading your book, that just how applicable all of the principles you talk about in terms of tracking a soulmate and relationship are equally powerful in working in all the other areas of our lives. So those people that are in relationships already, it's like, you know, now, you know, I want to learn more about publicity. Listen intently on what we discussed here around the soulmate secret, because the principles are the same, and that's one thing I really get from your book.
Well, what happened was I woke up one day at 43 and suddenly, I don't know why it took me so long to realize this, it's like, oh my God, I never got married. And I started to think about all the success I'd had in my career and wonder if the things that I did to be successful at work would also be successful in my love life. So I started applying all these manifestation tools and techniques to something that had worked in one area of my life to another area, and they worked equally as well. So, you know, your observation is spot on, because I always tell people everything that's in this book can be applied to any area of your life.
Yep. And you've outlined it, I think, so thoroughly and completely as well. I think everybody needs to get a copy of this book. let's talk, you know, right up front about, you know, one of the things you cover right up is how, you know, it's not too late to find love. I mean, here you are 43, and I know you've worked with people that have been even much older. But I know there might be some gremlin voices somewhere on the line that are saying, yeah, but, you know, there's no good men left. Yeah, I'm too old. You know, I'm a single mom. You know, what guy wants to take on, you know, somebody else's three-year-old? How do you address this?
Tackle first, because I know all of them to only be true if you insist that they are. My mother-in-law did this at the age of 80 and manifested a new soulmate. One of my best friends was a single mom working from home in the suburbs, never got out, and decided she'd manifest a soulmate who would find her, and hers came to her front door. You know, the story that all the good ones are taken, not true. I'm too old, I'm too fat, I'm too damaged. None of that is true unless you say it is. So if you want to insist on that, you're going to get to be right. But I have literally hundreds of stories of people of all ages, weights, financial backgrounds, been divorced 4 times, have 6 kids. And when they put their intention and attention on finding a soulmate, they did. You know, and it's really not even that hard. One of the most difficult things for me is to convey how easy it is.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I have talked about this before. You know, it really isn't. The soulmate secret is really what I did to manifest my soulmate 13 years ago. It's every step that I took. And you don't have to do all of them. I have 2 friends, both of them men in their 40s, that read the book, and each of them only did 1 thing in the book, and both of them are now engaged.
Oh, wow.
So you don't even have to do everything. But the thing you have to do is first choose. You know, decide for yourself, yes, I am ready, willing, available, able to manifest a soulmate in my life. You have to really own that that's what you want. And then you have to get clear. Well, okay, I'm going to put my order into the universe. What kind of soulmate do I want? This requires thinking. Okay, you don't want to leave it up to chance. You've done that already. It hasn't worked for you. You want to really think about, what are the traits and qualities I want this person to, you know, possess? what is our life together going to look like? And that means a little reflection time. And this looks, you know, you can look at your past relationships. Look at, you know, your last ex. What did you love about them? What did you hate about them? What would you like in the next person? What for sure don't you want? And take the don't wants and turn them into positives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you don't want to be stating negatives to the universe. It doesn't get you where you want to go. If you can just do those two things, you're like 90% of the way there. And the rest of it is fun projects to do that will take you the rest of the way. But the clarity is just so important.
You know what, and I couldn't agree more, and I think the emphasis on even being really thorough about what you want. I remember attracting my boyfriend that actually brought me to California and really, you know, focusing on the feelings and really what I wanted, but I left out like a couple things because I thought, well, that'll be too unrealistic to ask for that too. So it's like I got everything I wanted except, like, you know, a couple things that were like, you know, seal the deal for me.
Yeah, I was talking to this woman recently who had said to me she was in her mid-40s and she really wanted to manifest a soulmate. And I said to her, well, do you want kids? And she didn't answer me. And I said, it's really not that hard a question. You know, do you want kids? And it took us about 20 minutes for her to finally admit that she really didn't want to be anybody's mother. But because she was in her mid-40s, she was making the assumption that anybody that she would want to marry would already have children and she'd have to be a stepmother.
Mm.
And I told her my story. You know, I was 43 when I set out on this path, and I was very clear that not only did I not want children, I didn't want to be anybody's stepmother, and I wanted a guy who was already divorced. Now, why did I want a guy who was already divorced?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Who actually could make a commitment, had made a commitment, maybe made the wrong choice, but now knew what kind of fabulous marriage they wanted.
Mm.
And I found a great guy who'd been married once for 2 years when he was in his late 20s, knew he didn't want to have children, was okay with not having children. And the day we met, we even had that conversation.
Oh, wow. Well, so tell us how you met your husband. What's your story of how synchronicity brought you two together?
Wow. Well, I started with a list, and it had 48 items on it. And it had things like, I knew that I wanted somebody who was generous. Now, not necessarily generous with their wallet, but somebody who would be really generous with their time and energy and attention. I wanted to be the focal point of somebody's life. I didn't want some, you know, captain of industry who was captivated by their own career. I wanted somebody who could actually make me a really important part of their life because I knew I wanted the kind of marriage where the relationship came first. You know, I wanted somebody who was adventurous, who would travel to exotic places. I loved going to India and Egypt and all kinds of crazy places. I knew that I wanted a cat lover because all my life I've always had cats, and my ex-boyfriend had been allergic to cats, which was really unattractive.
Mm.
Whenever he'd come over, he was either had a runny nose and was sneezing and his eyes were red, or he was falling asleep from the medication.
Right, or you were going to have to get rid of your cat.
No, I was never going to get rid of the cat. That was clear. I got rid of him.
Yep.
You know, that wasn't the only reason. It was just not going to be a match. So I had this very long list. And then once I had my list, and let me tell you what the first item on my list was, because everybody should have this as their first item.
Mm-hmm.
My first item was, my soulmate is willing and available and ready for a long-term committed monogamous marriage without children. Now, of course, if you want kids, you add that in there. But that's how clear my first item was. And my second item was, and he already lives in San Diego or is willing to move.
Mm.
I knew I didn't want to leave San Diego. So I made this whole long list, and then I decided I was going to release it to the universe with a ritual. So I got out my calendar, and I decided that I wanted to do it on a Friday of a new moon, because new moons for me are a great time to start new projects, and Fridays are the day of Venus, the goddess of love and beauty. So it turned out that the next new moon was on a Friday, and I took myself down to the beach. I had my list with me. I read it over one last time. I blessed it, said a prayer over it, and then I set it on fire, and I scattered the ashes in the ocean. And after I did that, I took myself out to lunch. I ordered a glass of champagne, and I toasted my soulmate, and I told him the cosmic welcome mat was now out. I was ready for him. And then I did several other things. I took I had another copy of my wish list, the rough draft, and I used it to make a vision map. So I cut out pictures and images and words from magazines that were really a visual representation of the life that I was now creating. And I made a beautiful vision board. And then I created a sacred altar around the vision board. So on my altar I had two pink candles, and I had a pair of doves, and I had icons of the Hindu god and goddess Krishna and Radha. They're the lovers in the Hindu pantheon. And I had other little tchotchkes that were meaningful to me. And once a week I would put fresh cut flowers on my altar. And every day for a few minutes I would sit in front of it. I would look at my vision map, and then I would meditate. And I would imagine what it would feel like inside of my body when we were together. And I would experience literally being with my soulmate on some other dimension, knowing that he was already in my life. And that's really a key part of the manifestation process. Some people call this visualization, but I actually call it a feelingization, because unless you have the emotional component and you can feel throughout your body what it is you say you're having in your life, it doesn't really happen. You have to have this emotional connection to it.
Mm-hmm. So I love that word, feelingization, because it really does capture the essence of what we really need to do to connect with the vision. It's not just a mental thing. It really is this experiencing in every cell of your being what it's like to be with that person, like in the here and the now.
Yeah, it's really crucial to the whole part. And actually, throughout the Soulmate Secret, I have at least 7 or 8 different feelingizations to do, and then people can go to the website to download them and listen to them over and over again. Because sometimes you first have to do the feelingization to unhook yourself from past relationships,
mm-hmm.
which was another part of the process, because when we are intimate with another person, we leave our energy on them and in them, and they do the same to us. We are literally connected by energetic cords, and you have to cut these cords and make sure they're dissolved before there's room for new love to come in. So there's lots of ways to do it. You can go to a professional energy healer. You can take a salt bath. You can do certain meditations to do it. I did all of those things, and they're described in detail throughout the book. I'll show you how to do them. So I unhooked myself, and then...
Well, let's just ask a quick question here. It's like, how do you know that, you know, you're not really ready, or how do you know if, like, you need to do some unhooking before you can get to these other stages?
I think it's safe to assume that everybody needs to do the unhooking.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no way to be with somebody and not have that energy left on you and left in your home. So there's energy clearing to be done on and in your body and throughout your house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the easiest ways to do it in your home is by using the Native American technique of smudging, where you get some sage and you smoke it around the door frames and the windows. And if all of that sounds way too weird, the fastest way to do it is on a nice sunny day, open all the doors and the windows, get out your broom, and imagine you're sweeping the negative energy out the front door and the back door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can use your imagination for this. I always call it playing with your imagination. People say, well, how do I know if I'm doing it right? There's really no wrong way to do any of this stuff. You know, there are no hard and fast rules when you're dealing with the metaphysical. It's more about trusting yourself and what feels right to you. So while my book has everything that I did, you don't have to do all of that. You can go through it and read and see what feels right for you and just do those parts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that's...
Yeah, people are saying, well, but in your book you said this, and then you said that, and don't they contradict each other? And you know what? Sometimes they do, because there are no hard and fast rules. I'll give you an example of that. There's a paradox about manifestation. Part of it is you need to have this desire and belief that what you're asking for is already yours. And at the same time, you have to surrender and trust that it's already yours and let go of it and not obsess about it. You know, so let's say you were going to plant a garden, and you went out and you dug up the soil and you put in the plant and you gave it some fertilizer and you gave it some water. You wouldn't go out there at 3 o'clock in the morning and tug on the leaves to make it grow faster, because you trust that Mother Nature knows how to grow your plant, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like that when you're manifesting. You want to put your intention out into the universe, but then you've got to let it go. That's where you have to trust that it's already yours. Not like it's coming to you someday, but on some level, it's already yours. And you need to live in what I call living as if, the knowingness that what you've asked for is yours. So when you're doing this with a soulmate, there's some really easy ways to live as if. One of them is you go and start buying greeting cards that you're going to give them someday in the future. You buy tickets to concerts and plays that you may attend with them. You clean out space in your closet and your drawers for them. Literally make empty space so that someday when they arrive, there's some place for them to put their clothes. This is all living as if. This is trusting and knowing that they're going to walk through the door. Another thing that if you're really serious about doing this, let me preface it by saying this. If I said to whoever's listening right now, if I said to you, I guarantee you with absolute certainty your soulmate's walking through the door in 72 hours, chances are you would not have casual random sex with the guy down the street between now and then, right?
Hopefully not.
Yeah, so I'm saying if you're really serious, if you really believe that you are ready for your soulmate and you're doing these active things to manifest them, then you give up having casual random sex with people who or someone who is not the one.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that's such a good point. And
it's not easy. You'll get tested, I promise.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's so easy to go back to, you know, maybe what's comfortable and the old way, and I know there's some beliefs that get in there, well, you know, but this might be the best I can do. And
then you'll be right, and it will be the best that you can do. I was talking to Gay Hendricks about this yesterday. You know Gay, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he wrote all these great books.
And he's been on Conversations with the Masters series also, yeah.
He and I were talking about our favorite romantic comedy movies. And he was telling me that one of his favorites is Moonstruck with Cher and Nicolas Cage, which I just love that one as well. And I'm going to read you, I just put this in my newsletter this morning, what he said about why he loved this movie so much. It was so touching. He said, I love this film because one of the big lessons in it is to hold out for love rather than settling for less. Hold out for the passions of your heart.
I love that. Well, when you make a distinction, too, between the living as if and also wanting. So maybe clarify, like, those two things.
Yeah. So when we're wanting, when we're in the state of wanting or needing or craving, all we're going to get is that same feeling. When we're in a state of gratitude, I'm so grateful that my soulmate, my beloved, is already in my universe and is on the way to me physically. When you're in a state of gratitude, you're pulling in, you're magnetizing to you that which is already yours. And when you're in the state of wanting, you're repelling it because all you're getting is more wanting.
I love how you've described that, and I also want to kind of bring attention to sometimes once people attract a love into their life, I'm speaking from women experience and my own, that I can be in the wanting of like now wanting it to turn into the engagement and the proposal. And if we're hanging in that versus, you want to maybe draw a distinction too about kind of the wanting, even wanting engagement versus acting as if, and the energy that's, if you're living as if.
I mean, when I knew that I didn't want to date.
Mm-hmm.
I was never good at dating, never liked dating. So when I was manifesting Brian, what was on the list was we would meet at the exact right time. We would both know instantly, and we would be together from that moment on.
Mm.
And that's exactly what happened. Not only did we both know the day that we met, but everybody who was with us knew. I met him during a business trip.
Yep.
And everyone in the room saw it as well, because we were on a location shoot all day. So,
And how long did it take before you were engaged?
3 weeks.
Oh, my gosh, that is fast.
We got engaged 3 weeks later, and we got married a year after that.
Wow.
Of course, I realized, even though we were engaged, and I knew he was the one, I didn't know him.
Right.
It was really an interesting time, because I discovered that when you get everything that you ever thought you wanted, it's a whole new level of stress. Now, it's happy stress. But, here I was thinking, God, I'm crazy. I'm about to turn 44, and now I'm engaged to a guy that I don't know. And there's a very mystical part of me that knows that he's the one. And then there's this practical entrepreneur who's saying, what, are you crazy? You don't even know this guy.
Right.
How to get to know each other.
Oh, my gosh. This is so hysterical as I'm listening to this. I'm like, I should have followed Ariel's getting engaged in 3 weeks. I had in my mind, of course, intention with my husband that I would give it exactly 1 year, no more, no less, because if after a year, it's like I didn't have years to determine if this was going to work or not and then have to get over it. It's like, and I told him that, like, almost right up front. Of course, he waited exactly 1 year to propose. I could have used your strategy there.
it really wasn't even a strategy. I mean, I knew I didn't want to date, but I didn't see the proposal coming.
Mm.
It just sort of came out of left field, and there was nothing to say but yes. And then a few weeks after that, he moved in. In fact, I woke up one morning, and I was like, when did you move in? And, of course, looking back, this was everything that I asked for.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily it's worked out really, really well. But I think the point I want to make here is this stuff is really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
It really, really works. And that's why you have to be so clear about what is it that you want. Like, really think about, are we going to live together and work together, or are we both going to go our separate ways every morning at 8 a.m.? Are we going to be long distance, or are we going to live in the same house? Do we both want to have kids? Is it okay if he has kids? What are our hobbies? Where do we like to travel? I was listening to Rosie on the radio the other day,
mm-hmm.
and she was talking about how one of the reasons her long-term relationship broke up was because Rosie loves to be in Miami on her boat on the water. And Kelly, her last partner, hated the sun, hated the water, didn't know how to swim, and they had totally different life interests. And Rosie, being the dominant one, sort of pulled Kelly along for years, and Kelly did all these things she didn't want to do until eventually she basically said, I hate the water.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to really think about what is it my biggest fantasies? What are we doing on the weekends? Where are we traveling? Am I a beach person or a mountain person?
Mm-hmm.
Do I want to take separate vacations? That may be okay for you. It wasn't okay for me. I wanted somebody who was going to, go to ashrams in South India and go to 5-star resorts in Bora Bora.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So all of that was on my treasure map.
So what do you say to people that are in that, gosh, but, asking for everything I want, isn't that going to limit my options? And what do you say to that?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by everything. If you're giving, he has to be 6'1.5", 163 pounds with, if you're getting that specific, yes, you're limiting your options. But if it's more about the feel, how are you going to feel in the relationship? That's what we're talking about. When you wake up on a Saturday morning and you roll over, before you open your eyes, what is it you want to be feeling? And what are the qualities that this person's going to have that's going to have you feel that way?
Mm-hmm.
So then it doesn't matter how many things you're asking for, you know, because it's really more about what's going to generate the feeling. You know, if you say, I need somebody who's interested in art, do you really have to get specific? Well, it can only be early Warhol or Picasso's Blue Period. Or can it be somebody who's got a great appreciation for all kinds of art, whether it's architecture, music, modern art, ancient ruins? You know, what's the feeling of somebody who is a tactile visual person?
Mm.
You know, and most importantly, don't you want to be their most prized possession? Don't you want to be the work of art in the room?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That was the work that I did when I finally learned about, attracting a mate into my life. And I really worked on, I decided I really wanted to feel adored and cherished. Because that was the thing I always complained about in my last relationship.
Right, me too. We must have dated the same journey.
I know. But, you know, really taking that time to, like, step into the feelings of what it is to be, to imagine somebody, you know, sitting across from the dinner table and eliciting those feelings of adored and cherished inside of you. Because if we can't feel it inside of us first, you know, we could have a fabulous man show up in our life, but if our insides aren't prepared to meet that man, we're going to see them like we see any other guy.
Exactly, which is why this is why God invented therapists and coaches. You know, because if you have spent, 40 years manifesting the wrong kinds of frogs, then maybe it's time to do a little deeper level work, and fall in love with yourself. I was talking to Chris Northrup about this one day, about the whole self-love piece of it, and she said, oh, you know what I do? Every time I walk past a mirror, I blow myself a kiss.
Oh, I love that.
Isn't that great? I was like, I'm going to steal that. She's like, fine, tell the world.
Well, and that's really another big feeling piece, that if we don't have that sense of love to give to ourselves, you know, how can we ever expect somebody else to give it to us? We're always going to then be dependent on them. And, well, we know that doesn't work very effectively.
Yeah, no, self-love's a really important part of it. And, you know, if you're finding resisting this conversation, you know, before you kill us off and make us wrong, you know, find out, well, where is the resistance? What part of me thinks it's wrong to love myself? Now, we're not asking you to be egotistical or conceited or selfish, but it is important to love yourself. And one of the analogies to that is when you get on an airplane and you fasten your seatbelt, the flight attendants always tell you, should there be a drop in cabin pressure and the air masks fall out, please put yours on first before you attempt to help anybody else, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because until you're loving yourself, you can't give love to anybody else.
Yeah.
You know, and you start with baby steps. You don't have to be, you know, the most madly in love woman in the world with yourself to manifest a soulmate, but you have to be a few steps into it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's so true, so true. Well, and there's, I love some of the other things in the book, too, about, you know, really checking to see if you're really ready energetically. And you really have got, a great way to go through, are you still in love with somebody else? Are you angry somewhere? You know, I know you've got some forgiveness practices to help. Again, that's kind of all part of that freeing up energetically.
Yeah, forgiveness is the first part of the book. That was by design. You need to forgive yourself first and foremost for any mistakes that you're judging yourself for having made in past relationships. And you need to forgive all your exes for anything you deem that they did wrong. It doesn't matter whether they did it or they didn't do it. You need to forgive them and let them go. And if you're really, truly still in love with somebody else, quit trying not to love them. It's impossible not to love somebody that you love. But what you can do is find a little pocket in your heart to place them in. You can love them for the rest of your life, but what you can't do is keep obsessing about them. If you know that this person is not the one and for whatever reason you're not together, you're not going to be together, then it's okay to love them, but you need to move on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the thing that's painful about that is when you try to not love them. That's where the pain is. You're resisting what's true for you.
And such a powerful point that we can continue to love somebody in the past that's not our ideal match. I like that, and kind of compartmentalize that, you know, a pocket in your life, but then kind of it's like energetically opening up a much larger space in which to love somebody, you know, brand new, where it's reciprocated in the way that you really desire.
Exactly.
Yeah, so good. Well, and I just have to echo, too, on just, you know, an endorsing of what sounds like woo-woo stuff in terms of energetic, you know, cutting energetic ties and so forth. I know you and I were talking a little earlier today, and I shared the story that literally I met my husband. I had gone into a body worker, energy worker, and had really gotten clear that I was done with, well, the guy that was going through the divorce, the previous guy. And then I said, well, and for that matter, any other guy, I want you to cut the energy ties with all of them. And I was really, really clear, like a greater level of conviction than I'd ever had. And I met my husband 5 hours later, and I knew on the, you know, even the next morning, I looked at this visualization that she had done. I wasn't concerned about the visualization part. I just wanted the energy to be cut. But I was like, no way, this could happen so fast. And that second date was like, I had thought, you're going to marry me, aren't you? I didn't tell him that, but amazing how that works out.
Yeah, it's just, it's really easy. And you know, you don't even have to believe all this stuff to give it a try. You know, don't believe it. Just try it and see if it works for you.
Yep. Yep.
You know, there's no harm in it.
Well, do you want to offer even maybe another suggestion? I mean, here now you've been married 13 years. What suggestions do you have for keeping love alive? I think about 70% of my subscribers are married, about 30% single. How do we apply these principles to keep love alive?
Well, I think really it's about what your intention is. You know, do you want to have a magnificent relationship? And if you do, are you willing to do something towards that every day? You know, like Brian and I spend a little bit of time every day just looking at each other, just like being grateful that we're together, just reminding each other of how much we love each other. And it's just a little thing. It's not a big thing, but it's what we choose to do. I also find that talking your story, telling people how you met,
mm-hmm.
really keeps it alive for you. You know, who can you share your story with? In the process right now of writing the next book, which is really on that topic, and the book is going to be called Wabi Sabi Love, The Secret to How Soulmates Find Perfect Love in Imperfect Relationships.
Mm.
It's not coming out till January 2012. But it's based on the ancient Japanese art form called wabi-sabi, which says that you find beauty and perfection in imperfection. So in wabi-sabi, if you had a big vase and it had a crack down the middle of it, they would put it on a pedestal and shine a spotlight on the crack, because wabi-sabi honors all things that are imperfect and old and mellowed and impermanent. So I really believe that finding ways to love the imperfections in yourself and in your partner is going to bring you ultimately more joy. So what does that look like? One of the stories I'll have in the book is about a woman named Diane, whose husband is almost 20 years older than her. And for years he had this completely annoying habit of he still has it. Every morning he gets up, he makes coffee and toast, and then he walks around the house eating the toast, leaving a trail of breadcrumbs wherever he goes. And she's a neat freak, and the crumbs make her crazy. And for years she annoyed him. And then one day as she was sweeping up the crumbs, it was like close to his 70th birthday, she realized in this flash of genius that the crumbs were a symbol that she got to spend another day with Jerry, that he was still with her.
Mm.
And now every day she goes looking for the crumbs, and she's grateful for the crumbs because it means they have another day together.
Oh, I love that. Gives me like tears.
Yeah, well, that's what wabi-sabi is. How can we find the perfection in the imperfection?
Mm.
You know, what is it that drives you crazy about your partner? And how could you reframe it or change the story and have it mean something really wonderful? You know, I'll give you a story. Brian and I, he's a talker. He's a yakker. I mean, he can talk forever. And it's sometimes I didn't want to listen. You know, I had other things to do. And of course, he would notice when I was drifting. And that was a hot button for him because he was the youngest child. His issue was always wanting to be heard. And finally, one day, I said to him, "You're like those guys on Speaker's Corner in London. You just got to get up on your soapbox and talk." And he said, "That's right. Sometimes I am." And I said, "Great, then I'm going to be your audience." Because I realized that's what we're here to do for each other. We're here to witness each other's lives. And if I'm not going to listen to them, somebody else will. And as soon as I was able to change it to, "Oh, what's he going to talk about today?" You know, and turned it into something fun. Now we both laugh about it. It's like, "Okay, I'm on my soapbox. I only need 5 minutes. Here's what I need to say." As opposed to me sort of like silently seething, going, "Oh, is he ever, going to shut up?"
Mm-hmm. Boy, that's so true. I think there was some PBS special about relationships, and when we get into like resentment, which could be what you do if you keep resisting this, that resentment is actually one of the biggest indicators of relationships not working in a long time, that resentment and criticism of these types of things.
Yeah, and that's all comes down to, communication, being able to say what's true for you without killing the other person.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, sometimes if he's talking to me, it's like, "Okay, I know this is really important, and I need to be on a conference call in 5 minutes. Can I get back to you in an hour and hear all this?" And sometimes he'll say no, and I'll go, "Okay, go. You got 3.5 minutes." But yeah, resentment's a killer.
Wow.
Resentment and anger will really get you.
Well, I put in a vote that if you can get your book done sooner, than I know it's been 2012. I think the world needs this book, but I know publishing takes what it takes.
Yeah, I could get it done sooner, but my publisher is just adamant that it come out January 2012. They said January is my month, and there was no way I could get it out for next January because I haven't finished writing it yet. So I'm going to get the website up a year in advance, and we'll be talking about this way in advance. But unless a miracle happens, I don't think it's going to be out sooner than that. But I want to tell you another story from the book that I really love. Do you know the story of Aristophanes?
I don't know that I know it.
So Plato had this huge, was it Plato or Socrates? Plato, I think it was Plato, had this gathering back in the 3rd century. And they had all these various philosophers and comics sharing stories. And Aristophanes shared this story that in the beginning, way back during the time of Zeus, that there was only one type of being on the planet. And it was a form of a human that had four arms and four legs and two sets of genitalia, male and a female. And they rolled through life in ecstasy and bliss. They were just happy and complete and wonderful. And Zeus got really jealous because he felt like these beings weren't honoring him and the other gods like they should be. And in a fit of anger, Zeus took his sword and cut the beings in half and turned them into three kinds of beings. There was one that had two arms and two legs and was female, and there was another that had two arms and two legs that was a male, and that the only way you could mate was either male-female, female-female, or male-male. And that story, I believe, is why most of us are on a path to reunite with our other half, because we were once whole.
Mm. Wow, that's a beautiful story. So true. Well, so we could talk more about soulmates, but I want to also talk a little bit about publicity. But before we do, I know you also have a soulmate kit, which because we have really just touch the surface and your soulmate kit. Tell us a little bit about that. And actually, my assistant, if those of you that are listening on the line, we're going to be sending out a follow-up email, as we always do for these calls, and there'll be a link there. But in case you want to go there right now, if you go to http://tinyurl, that's tinyurl.com/soulkit, SOULKIT. Arielle, tell us about the Soulmate Kit. I love this. And we also have a little coupon code, too, for our listeners.
Yes, I think we've got a $50 off code for you. I don't remember what the code is, though.
The code is SAVE50.
Oh, that's it. Yeah,
yep. SAVE50. So when you get to, if you decide you want to get this, you'll just put that in at the tail end of your purchase. But tell us what's in it.
It's got the book, The Soulmate Secret, and then it's got three audio CDs. The first one is all of the feelingizations, which help you release the past while creating the future. They also help you feel in every cell in your body that what you're asking for is already yours. There's another one that helps you unblock your heart from receiving the love of your life. So there's about seven of them all together on one of the CDs. Then there's another one from my sister, Debbie Ford, called Falling in Love with Yourself, which is a feelingization on self-love that's really beautiful. And then there's another one that is a series of interviews I did with soulmate couples that really share their personal stories of how they manifested each other and how they keep the romance alive. And then we've got two DVDs. The first DVD is really the entire book and feelingizations on DVD. And then there's another DVD that's interviews I did with Gay Hendricks and Joan Borsenko on how to heal a broken heart. And then there's a third bonus DVD with Dr. George Pratt, who's the head of psychology at Scripps here in San Diego. You've probably seen him on Larry King a few times. And he does a real-time emotional healing therapy session that you can follow along with for an hour. Really, really powerful. And then there's a couple of bonus items as well. So it's just a chock-full kit that has absolutely everything you need to manifest love.
Well, I think a fabulous package, and that is, we'll send the link out, but it's tinyurl.com/soulkit, and the coupon code to save $50 is SAVE50. So we'll send that out. So let's talk a little bit about publicity. I know we've only got about 11 minutes left, but maybe we can get a few secrets of you know, from behind the scenes about publishing, publicity, building platform, and so, what can you share us
about which part?
Well, maybe to start with, what's the difference that you see between, say, the 11, number one best-selling authors that you've worked with, people like Deepak and your sister Debbie, and the ones that don't ever rise above noise level?
Oh, great question. So the successful authors are all on a mission. They are completely passionate about their work, and they're doing it because they really feel divinely guided to share a message with the world, as opposed to the people who just really want to be famous or sell a lot of books and, just have this desire to be an author. So the biggest authors I ever worked for were always on a mission.
Wow. And would you say that there's, like, what would then be the difference between those people that are really on a mission that are not yet above noise level and the people that are on a mission, obviously, people like Debbie, Deepak, Neil Donald Walsh, clearly we can see they're on huge missions. But what would be the difference if we subset it down to people on a mission?
I'm not sure.
Was that question clear or not so clear?
No, not so clear.
Okay. So So let's say we take maybe one of the listeners here on the call. In fact, you know, I'm going to use somebody as an example. I was just in Florida, and a gal actually had her book published from HarperCollins. She's really connected, clear that she's on a mission. She wrote a book about it's all about daughters writing letters to their mothers.
Uh-huh.
And healing kind of that relationship. And so she had that first book, but, you know, she did her, you know, first stream, kind of got a little bit burnt out, only made, you know, X amount of money, and now has kind of gone back to teaching as a professor to kind of lick her wounds and kind of get ready for the next round. What might you say to someone like her about kind of getting back out there?
Well, the first thing you need to know is that you should never quit your day job.
Mm-hmm.
There's almost no money being an author. That's not why you should write a book. In fact, the only authors, I actually don't know any authors that live solely on their royalties. All the biggest authors are really living off their speaking fees or their workshop fees. So, you know, while, you know, 0.1% of the top of the publishing world is making a lot of money, most of them aren't making enough to pay the light bill.
Mm.
So you don't write a book to make money. You write a book because it's your ticket into the credibility game. You know, if you want to become an expert, a speaker, someone who the media respects, you need the book. If you're going to do workshops, you want to sell the book in the back of the room. But a lot of people go into this completely blind to how publishing works, and they have all these fantasies about it. But if you do the basic math, I can show you how it works. So the head of Barnes & Noble last year gave out this statistic that less than half of 1% of all the books published in a year sell more than 50,000 copies over the lifetime of a book.
Wow.
Okay. Less than half of 1% sell more than 50,000 copies. So let's say you're one of the lucky ones that does sell 50,000 copies, and that would be like winning the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
On a paperback that costs, let's say you have a paperback that costs $13, the standard royalty rate is 7.5%. So 7.5% of $13 is a little over a dollar, I think. Like, it's not a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And out of that, let's say it is a dollar just to round out the numbers, then you have to pay your agent 15%. Okay, so now you got 85 cents. And then out of that 85 cents, you then have to pay your taxes. Okay, so let's say you end up with 65 cents times 50,000 copies. It doesn't equal your salary for a year.
Right, right.
That's if you're successful, because if, in fact, you sold 50,000 copies, you would have publishers fighting over you. You would be a very successful author. So you need to know going into it that you're not doing it for the money. If you're doing it for the money, you're just not paying attention.
Right.
No money in the books. But there is great value in being able to say you're an author. It will help you get interviews with the media, which will raise your visibility, which will help fill your workshops and people coming to hear you speak and buy your other products, because the book is not the only product you want to have. You know, look at what I'm doing. Actually, my book, The Soulmate Secret, came out of the first version of the Soulmate Kit. I created the Soulmate Kit because I was burned out from writing books, didn't want to do another book, but knew there was a demand for this information. So I created an online product. A year after it was out, HarperCollins saw the product and made me an incredible offer to turn it into a book.
Oh, wow.
So we took the Soulmate Kit off the market for a year. We're just now reintroducing it, and the book is one piece of a greatly expanded product, because within the book, I can't really give you the feelingizations in an auditory way. I can't give you the video on DVD, which is now part of the kit, and all the extra goodies that are now part of this whole product. So that's kind of the short version.
Ah, that's good. That's good. Well, and for, say, an author that wants to break through that, the 50,000 copies, you know, what are some of the things that you coach people like Deepak or Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen, and what are some of the ways that you coach them?
Well, the thing that they all had in common was that, A, they were willing to spend money on having a full-time publicist for years before they got famous. Okay, for years they made a huge investment in being out there in the media, and they said yes to every interview I ever offered to them. Because there's a lot of authors out there that I know that you've never heard of, because I would call them up and say, okay, here's the next interview, and they'd start grilling me. Well, this radio station in Tulsa, Oklahoma, is it a 50,000-watt station? Is it really worth my time to do this? You know, an hour of my time is really valuable. Should I be doing this interview? I promise you, Deepak Chopra, Neil Donald Walsh, Mark Victor Hansen, Joan Borsenko, Marianne Williamson never asked me those questions. If I set up an interview, they just said, yes, thank you, and they went and they did it. And that's why they sold more than 50,000 books.
Wow. And that just goes back to that really being on a mission. I mean, if you're, you know, if you can even connect with one person on that call.
Right. They were out there talking about something that they loved. They weren't, you know, crunching numbers going, is this worth my time? Because I can tell you, I don't know how much time we have, but I'll tell you this one story very briefly about Wayne Dyer. So way, way, way back when, Wayne Dyer self-published his first book. It was called Your Erroneous Zones. And he was selling the books out of the trunk of his car, and he was booking himself on radio shows. And one night, as he was driving home from a very late-night radio show, wondering to himself, what am I doing? Is anybody even listening out there? I must be crazy. And the next day his phone rang, and this man called him and said, hi, my name is so-and-so. I'm a talent booker for The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. I was driving home from work at 2 in the morning, and I heard you on the radio show. You were great. Would you like to come on The Tonight Show?
Wow.
And that was the start of 20 appearances, which launched his career.
Wow. That's inspiring.
That's the difference. Those are, you know, there are the people who say, you know, that it happened to me. I once did a radio interview at 4 in the morning in Gainesville, Florida, and I didn't want to do it, but it put my book on the bestseller list, because what I didn't know at the time was that little radio station was syndicated as 60 other little radio stations.
Wow. Oh, gosh. That's good stuff. Well, you want to maybe just share what other things you address in Everything You Should Know package?
Oh, yeah. So it's everythingyoushouldknow.com, and it's everything you should know about publishing, publicity, and building a platform. And in it, we go into extreme detail of how to become an author, an expert, and a speaker, what publishers are looking for and expecting, how to get an agent, what they're expecting, how to hire a publicist, how to do your own publicity, how to build a platform, how to become a speaker and an expert, how they all work together, the conversations you need to have with these various people. And in the resource guide, we go as far as to give you the names, addresses, phone numbers, and emails of everything from my favorite agents to my favorite producers at the Oprah Show.
Oh, wow.
That, in a nutshell, is everything you should know. It's 23 hours of CDs and a 500-page resource guide, and you can check it all out at everythingyoushouldknow.com.
And I have a feeling it's probably less expensive to buy this package than to hire you personally.
Well, I'm not for hire, so it's the only option out there.
Right, that's
good. I got tired of saying the same thing over and over and again, and every consulting gig that I did, I realized I was having the same lengthy conversation over and over again. I thought, well, this is silly.
Right.
Put it all in a box.
Yeah, let's leverage it. Well, we're at the top of the hour, but if you have one more minute, I'd love for you to share a little bit about spiritual cinema.
I'd love to. So Spiritual Cinema Circle is a DVD club dedicated to movies about inspiration, love, and compassion. And we have an acquisition team that goes to film festivals around the world that finds shorts, documentaries, and features that will open your heart, expand your mind, and stir your soul. And we charge $21 a month, and every month we send you a DVD with 4 films on it that's yours to keep. So generally it's a feature film, a documentary, and 2 short films. And
I just have to say, and they're fabulous. Some of them are 10 minutes, some of them are an hour. They're different lengths, but as my husband and I, we recently watched a bunch of these, and they leave a little imprint on your soul. So if you're wanting something more inspirational than shoot 'em up movies or a chick flick, we'll include a link on this as well.
And, you know, they run the gamut. I mean, you know, a couple of years ago we had The Secret, and we recently had Wayne Dyer's movie, The Shift. And coming up month after next, we're going to have the brand-new Barbara Marx Hubbard film documentary, Visions for a New Humanity. In June, we're starting a new biography series, and the first one will be an hour-long biography of Marianne Williamson, sort of in the form of the actor's studio style.
Oh, nice.
And we'll be doing those in the coming year. So it's a real mix of films, and none of them have sex or violence in them.
And one thing for sure is they will get you thinking, affect you emotionally, spiritually. They're really, really fabulous. So we'll include links for people. This will be a juicy follow-up package since you are just a wealth of resources.
Well, thanks. Yeah, definitely send them a link, because we have a free trial offer, so you can get your first month of films for free. You just pay a shipping fee, and in the U.S. it's $4.95.
Oh, nice. Fantastic, fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, as we round out our call, first off, I just want to thank you so much for being here. What final words would you have for our listeners here today?
Wow, let's see. I think I want to leave them with a Rumi poem, if that's okay with you.
Oh, yes.
And let's see if I can find my... Here's one of my favorites. Your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all the barriers within yourself that you have built against it.
Mm. Beautiful. Beautiful. Well, I so appreciate you. I love your work, and I hope everybody goes and gets themselves a soulmate kit if they're single and ready for, really ready to attract that special person in their lives. And I just thank you for being here. And I'm going to just open up the lines and have our listeners thank you themselves for being on our call today.
Oh, thank you. It was great talking with you.
So the lines are open. You can say thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you on the next call.